Recorded Books presents An Unabridged Recording of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Cabin Fever, by Jeff Kinney. Narrated by Ramon de Ocampo.
November. Saturday. Most people look forward to the holidays, but the stretch between Thanksgiving and Christmas just makes me a nervous wreck. If you make a mistake in the first 11 months of the year, it's no big deal. But if you do something wrong during the holiday season, you're gonna pay for it. Like, well, maybe pinching your little brother? That happened one year, and I only got one stinking present. It's too much pressure to be on your best behavior for a whole month. The most I can really handle is 6 or 7 days in a row. So if they move Thanksgiving to the week before Christmas, it would be fine by me. Kids whose families don't celebrate Christmas are lucky because they don't have to stress out whenever they do something wrong at this time of year. In fact, I have a few friends in that category who I think act a little extra jerky around now just because they can. The thing that really makes me nervous is this whole Santa issue. The fact that he can see you when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake really creeps me out. So I've started wearing sweatpants to bed because I really don't need Santa seeing me in my underwear. I'm not really convinced that Santa has the time to keep an eye on you 24 hours a day anyway. I figure he can only check in on each kid once or twice a year for a few seconds, and with my luck, that happens at the most embarrassing moments. Like, for example, when I pick my nose. If Santa really does see everything you do, then I could be in trouble. So when I write him, I don't say what I want for Christmas and all that. I use my letters to paint myself in the best possible light. Dear Santa, I did not throw a crabapple at Mrs. Taylor's cat, even though it might have looked that way from a distance. Sincerely, Greg Heffley. Then there's this naughty or nice list they're always talking about. You hear about it, but you never actually get to see it. So it's up to grown-ups to tell you where you stand at any given moment. And something about that just doesn't seem right. Like my mom might say, "If you help me with these groceries, I'll bet it'll be just enough to make Santa's nice list." I kind of wonder how accurate the list really is, anyway. There's a kid named Jared Pyle who lives up the street from me, and if there's anyone who deserves to be on the naughty list, it's him. But last year he got a dirt bike for Christmas, so don't even ask me what Santa was thinking on that one. It's not just Santa I've got to worry about either. Last year, when Mom was going through some old boxes, she found a homemade doll from her childhood. Mom said the doll is called Santa Scout, and that his job is to watch how kids behave and then report back to Santa at the North Pole. Well, I'm not a fan of that idea. First of all, I think you have a right to privacy in your own home. And second, Santa Scout gives me the willies. I don't really buy the idea that this doll is feeding Santa information, but just in case, I try to be extra good whenever I'm in the same room as Santa Scout. But it probably doesn't matter anyway, because my older brother Roderick is constantly feeding Santa Scout bad information about me. He'll look right at Santa Scout and say, "I, Greg Heffley, took a $20 bill out of my mother's purse." What? Every morning when I wake up, Santa Scout is in a new place, which I guess is supposed to prove that he traveled to the North Pole overnight. But I'm starting to wonder if it's really Roderick who moves him. Sunday. Today we took all our Christmas decorations out of the storage room in the basement. We have boxes full of ornaments, and some of them are pretty old. There's one with a picture of me and Roderick taking a bath in the sink that's really embarrassing. But Mom won't let me throw it out. We put up the tree in the living room and started hanging ornaments on it. My little brother Manny was taking a nap upstairs. And when he woke up and found out we were decorating the tree without him, he had a total meltdown. The reason Manny was so upset was because someone hung his favorite ornament, this candy cane he really likes. So Mom took it off the tree and handed it to Manny to hang up himself. But Manny wanted his ornament to be the first one on the tree. So that meant we had to take all the decorations down, just so he could get his way. And that's just the kind of thing that happens in my house every single day. Mom hasn't started to use the threat of Santa as a way of getting Manny to behave, but I'm sure she will soon. I don't think it's such a good strategy for keeping us in line, though, because the second Christmas is over, Mom doesn't have any real leverage. I mean, it's hardly going to work if she threatens, "Well, the Easter Bunny is going to be very disappointed in you boys." Monday. Right before Thanksgiving break, there was a contest at school to see who could come up with the best anti-bullying slogan, and the grand prize was a pizza party for the winning team. The poster read, "Only you can stop bullying. Form a team of up to 5 people and come up with the best anti-bullying slogan. The winning team will get a pizza party in the cafeteria. Let's make bullying extinct." Everyone wanted that pizza party, and people didn't care what they had to do to win it. 2 groups of girls in my grade came up with slogans that were really similar, and each group accused the other one of stealing their idea. One claimed, "Bullies are mean." The other, "Bullies are meanies." The whole situation spun out of control, and eventually the vice principal had to step in to stop it from turning into a full-scale riot. Our school only has 1 legitimate bully this year anyway, and his name is Dennis Root. And with all the signs and posters everywhere, "Bulldoze bullying, no bully zone, stop bullying now," I'm pretty sure the message is getting through to him. The day before Thanksgiving, there was a big anti-bullying assembly, and everyone in the auditorium was looking at Dennis the whole time. I kind of felt sorry for him, so I tried to make him feel better. I actually gave him a pat on the back. Even though Dennis is the only real bully in our school this year, we had a bunch of them last year. People were constantly getting picked on at recess, so the teacher set up a station on the playground where kids could press a button if they needed to get a grown-up's attention. Unbelievably, it read, "Tell a teacher station. Press button for help." Well, the tele-teacher station just ended up being a convenient place for the bullies to hang out and find their next victims. Because anytime anyone got near it, rawr! Run away! The teachers say teasing counts as bullying too, but I don't think there's any way they're going to put a stop to that. Kids are always calling each other names and that kind of thing at my school. In fact, one of the reasons I try to stay under the radar is because I don't want to end up getting stuck with a nickname like Cody Johnson did. In kindergarten, Cody stepped in some dog poop at recess, and ever since then, people have called him Dookie. And I'm not just talking about the kids, either. I'm talking about the teachers and even the principal. Once it was announced over the loudspeaker, "Congratulations to Dookie Johnson for getting straight A's in the 3rd quarter." I'll tell you this, if I ever get a nickname like Dookie, I'll move to a different town. But what would probably happen is that someone from my old school would move to my new town and the whole thing would just start back up again. Just when it seemed all right, I'd hear, "Hey, Dookie, how you doing?" The teachers always say that when you're getting picked on, you should tell an adult. I think that's a good idea. But it didn't work out so well when I was getting bullied. There was this kid who lived in the neighborhood next to mine, and for some reason, everyone called him Nasty Pants. Every time me and my friend Rowley went through Nasty Pants' neighborhood, he chased us with a stick. The thing that really stunk was that me and Rowley used the woods in that neighborhood as a shortcut to get to school. So we started having to go out of our way to avoid getting harassed by Nasty Pants. We did exactly what the teachers are always telling us to do and complained to the vice principal. But Vice Principal Roy said that since Nasty Pants didn't go to our school, there was nothing he could really do about it. After getting chased a few more times, I decided I'd had enough. So I told Dad about the situation. I was afraid Dad was going to say I needed to toughen up and deal with the problem myself. But he surprised me. Dad said that he had problems with a bully at my age, and he knew just what I was going through. Dad's bully was named Billy Staples. And Billy's favorite thing to do was pin a kid's arm behind his back and hold it there until he cried. Dad said that the kids in the neighborhood told their parents about Billy, and they all went to Billy's house to confront his mom and dad. Mr. Staples made Billy promise to never pick on anyone ever again. And Dad said Billy burst into tears and might have even wet his pants. Well, after hearing that story, I don't think Billy Staples would have been any match for Nasty Pants. But I told Dad I liked the idea of complaining to the bully's parents. I called up Rowley and told him to come over and to bring his dad, because we needed as much backup as we could get. Dad knocked on Nasty Pants' door, and we waited for one of his parents to open it. But Nasty Pants himself came to the door, and me and Rowley took off. I guess I should have described Nasty Pants to Dad, because it took him a while to understand that the little kid who came to the door was the one who was causing us all that trouble. Dad talked to Mrs. Pants, and she told Dad her son was only 5, and that he just gets a little wound up sometimes. On the way home, Dad was pretty mad at me for letting myself get bullied by a kid who was still in kindergarten. But let me just say in my defense that when some kid is chasing you with a stick, you don't stop to ask him how old he is. Tuesday. They took the last piece of playground equipment away at school today. We started off the year with all sorts of things, like monkey bars and swings and stuff. But now the playground is an empty sawdust pit. So recess is basically like a prison yard. I heard the school was having trouble paying the insurance for the playground, so every time there was some kind of accident or injury on a piece of equipment, the easiest thing to do was just remove it. In October, Francis Knott went flying off the swing set and landed on the seesaw, so that took out 2 big items right there. We lost the monkey bars when a girl named Christine Higgins climbed to the top and then got too scared to come down. The teachers aren't allowed to touch kids, so they had to call Christine's parents to come and get her. Eventually, the only piece of equipment left was the balance beam, and I figured nobody could get hurt on that thing. But believe it or not, some idiot wasn't looking where he was going the other day, so now that's gone too. Without any playground equipment, there's really nothing for us to do. But the teachers won't even let us sit down, because they say we have to stay active. And it's not like you're allowed to bring in toys or video games to keep yourself occupied either. In fact, if you get caught with a toy on the playground, it'll get confiscated. Last week, somebody found a miniature car buried in the sawdust that looked like it had been there for years. The car had 3 missing wheels, but people were so desperate for entertainment that they lined up to play with it while others kept lookout. Now there's a black market for toys at our school. Christopher Stengel brought in a bunch of Legos from home yesterday, and I hear a single brick will set you back 50 cents. The teachers have banned a bunch of games we used to play, too. Last week, a group of boys were playing freeze tag, but one of them got hurt when someone shoved him from behind. So now we're not allowed to touch each other or even run. Today, people were playing air tag and getting around by speed walking. But it wasn't really the same. If you ask me, I think people are getting too carried away with all this safety stuff. I went to Manny's Pee Wee soccer game, and all the kids had to wear bicycle helmets. The only good thing about the playground equipment being gone is that now I actually have a chance to start doing well in school. I'm one of those people who has a hard time focusing when the teacher is talking. And when another class is having recess right outside the window, It's practically impossible to pay attention. Wednesday. Okay, I take back what I said about being glad the playground equipment is gone. Now the kids at recess don't have anything to do, so they just stare in through the windows, and that's seriously distracting when you're trying to take a test. It doesn't help that I'm not exactly the fastest test taker. In third grade, I had a teacher named Mrs. Sinclair who taught us all these great tricks for remembering multiplication facts. But they seriously slow me down. 8 times 4 is 32, 32, 32. 8 times 4 is 32, and now you know it's true. Earlier this year, we had a math teacher named Mr. Sparks who used to stand on his chair every time he wanted us to remember something important. But once, when Mr. Sparks was trying to get us to remember a math concept, one of the legs on his chair broke and he fell. Mr. Sparks broke his collarbone, and I heard he's suing the school over it. I don't remember the concept he was trying to teach us that day, but I do always remember never to stand on the furniture. During recess today, everyone was just waiting to go back inside. But then Rowley got up and started skipping around the playground. A few people started cheering and clapping. They must have thought Rowley was protesting all the new rules by skipping instead of running. But the truth is, skipping is just something Rowley likes to do. For some reason, it really gets on my nerves when Rowley skips. So it bugged me to see him prancing around the playground like that. Skipping is actually a real sore subject between the two of us. Rowley says I'm jealous of him because I don't know how to skip. But I think it just looks stupid. I will admit that I never exactly got the hang of skipping. In fact, I was the only kid in first grade who couldn't do it. I was afraid I'd be held back until I learned how to skip, but luckily, they let me move on to second grade. Still, I'm worried it's going to come back to haunt me later on. Like, maybe when I'm 18 and graduating, the principal might say, "Greg Heffley will not be receiving his diploma due to an inability to skip." Sometimes I wonder how me and Rowley ended up being friends in the first place, since we're so different. But at this point, I figure we're stuck with each other, so I just try to overlook the things he does that annoy me. Thursday. The thing that stinks about having Santa Scout watching my every move at home is that I can't get away with the things I used to do during the holidays. A few years ago, Mom and Dad put some gifts under the tree a week before Christmas, and it was driving me crazy not knowing what they were. One of the gifts had my name on it, and I was pretty sure it was a video game. I made a tiny little tear in the wrapping paper to see, and sure enough, it was a game I'd asked for. But then it was bugging me that a game I wanted was sitting right there under the tree, and I couldn't play it. So I went one step further and made a slit along the top of the packaging and slid the disc out. I opened the plastic case and removed the game, then put the box back in the wrapping paper and taped it closed. But I started to get paranoid that Mom was going to pick up the present and notice it felt lighter. So I opened it back up and put one of Roderick's heavy metal CDs inside the box to make it the same weight it was before. I think it might have been Headless Asylum, which, of course, comes with a big parental warning. I played the video game every night after Mom and Dad went to bed, and I actually beat it. But I forgot to put it back in the box, and on Christmas, when I opened my present in front of Mom and Dad, Roderick's CD slipped out and rolled onto the floor. The day after Christmas, Mom took the CD to the game hut and chewed the clerk out for selling her material that was inappropriate for kids. I just don't like not knowing what I'm getting for Christmas. And sometimes, I can't help myself. Last year, I went on Mom's email account and wrote to all our relatives to see if I could find out what they were getting me. Two, Gammy, Uncle Joe, Uncle Charlie, Grandma, Grandpa, Uncle Gary, Joanne, Leslie, Byron, and 23 more. Subject: gifts. Hey, everyone. Let me know what you're buying for Greg this year so we can coordinate. Thanks. Susan. But Mom keeps her email on the computer in the kitchen, and it's hard to get onto her account when Santa Scout is watching me like a hawk. Tonight I spent some time trying to decide what to put on my Christmas wish list this year. I try to be as specific as possible when I make my list, because whenever I leave my gifts up to Mom and Dad, I get some crazy stuff. A few years ago, I forgot to write out a wish list, and I paid the price for it. Mom was pregnant with Manny, and she wanted me to get ready for having a baby brother. So for Christmas, Mom got me a doll. Baby Alfredo, realistic doll for boys. He cries, he eats, he wets, encourages responsibility. Now grows hair. Progressive Parenting Toy of the Year. At first, I didn't want anything to do with it. Then I realized having a doll you could feed came in handy. In fact, I don't think a vegetable touched my lips for a month after I got Alfredo. It was so easy. Here comes the airplane, Alfredo. Open wide. But that wasn't the only thing I used that doll for. I found out that he made a really excellent comic book stand, too. Wherever. Even sitting on the John. I have to admit, after a few months, I got really attached to that doll. Since I didn't have a pet, it was kind of nice to have something to take care of for once. But one day, I came home from school and I couldn't find Alfredo anywhere. I searched the house from top to bottom, but there was no trace of him. The only thing I could think of was that I dropped Alfredo at some point and somehow didn't notice. I was pretty torn up about losing my doll, but what I was really worried about was Mom thinking I couldn't be trusted around my new baby brother. So I got a grapefruit out of the fridge and drew a face on it with a marker. Then I wrapped the grapefruit in a dish towel, and for the next 3 months, I pretended it was my doll. Mom and Dad didn't seem to notice, but I was terrified by the idea that the real Alfredo was going to find his way back home and get his revenge on me for abandoning him and replacing him with a fruit. In fact, I still worry about that to this day. It's the reason I always check to make sure my window is locked before I go to bed at night. Alfredo could be scratching at the glass. I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I actually got attached to that grapefruit, too. But after a while, it started to rot, and Dad traced the weird smell back to my Alfredo decoy. I cried when he threw it in the trash. Mom didn't seem too upset that I'd lost my doll, but I will say she's never left me alone in the house with Manny for more than 15 minutes. Like I said, though, it was nice to have something to take care of, and I missed that feeling. So these days, I've been spending a lot of time playing this game called Net Critters. In fact, I've been playing Net Critters every free second I get. The basic idea is that you have to feed your pet and keep it happy. And if your pet is happy, you get tokens so you can buy clothes and furniture and stuff like that. I've played so much that my pet Chihuahua has a mansion with an indoor swimming pool, a bowling alley, and about 150 different outfits. The only thing I'm not happy about is his name. Mom's the one who set up my account, and I can't figure out how to change the name she registered with. She chose Gregory's Little Friend. Ugh. Mom says I take better care of my virtual pet than I do myself, and I guess I can't argue with her there. Over the weekend, I played for 16 hours without even taking a break to go to the bathroom. But if you don't keep getting your pet new stuff, it starts to look unhappy, and that really stresses me out. You'll see the mood meter say, Gregory's little friend is feeling queasy. The problem is, you can only earn a certain number of tokens, and after that, you have to buy them with real money. Unfortunately, I don't have my own credit card, so that means I have to beg Mom and Dad to use theirs. and it's not real easy to convince Dad to break open his wallet so you can buy a fancy outfit for your virtual pet, because you want to see the mood meter say, Gregory's little friend is feeling snazzy. This year, I'm going to ask for a bunch of critters cash for Christmas, but I'm still trying to figure out what to put on the rest of my wish list. I could actually use a lot of different things, because a couple weeks ago when I spent the night at the hospital getting my tonsils out, Manny sold half of everything I owned at a yard sale for a dollar. But I'm not so sure I should ask for a normal gift like a video game or a toy this year. What I've realized is that every time you get something cool for your birthday or for Christmas, within a week, it's being used against you. For example, I got this great remote control helicopter for my birthday, and a week later, there was my dad saying, "We'll be taking this away until your English grade improves." That was the last I saw of the helicopter. One thing I know for sure is that this year I'm only accepting store-bought presents. Last Christmas, Mom gave me a really nice hand-knit blanket, and I had that thing wrapped around me for half the winter. But I found a picture of the very same blanket on Great Uncle Bruce, who passed away a few years ago. So I pawned it off on Roderick for his birthday. Sunday. I was going to play Net Critters all weekend, but yesterday, Mom said the amount of time I'm spending playing that game is unhealthy, and that I had to interact with a real live person. So I called up Rowley and asked him to come over, even though I was still a little bothered by the whole skipping thing. When Rowley got to my house, we sat down in front of the TV to play video games, but Mom said we had to shut off the machine and interact face to face. But one of the things that makes my friendship with Rowley work is that he doesn't mind watching me play video games. Plus, the reason our ancestors invented technology in the first place was so they didn't have to interact with one another. Mom sent me and Rowley down to the basement, and the two of us tried to figure out what to do. I'd asked Rowley to bring some DVDs with him so we could stay up late watching movies. But he only brought home movies, and you couldn't pay me to watch those. I mean, really? Rowley's fifth grade play? Rowley's birth? Mom brought us down some wacky sentences books, where you fill in the blanks to create funny phrases. For the first round, Rowley came up with the words, and I wrote them down in the blanks. The phrases we made were actually pretty funny. But what wasn't funny was Rowley's new habit of saying LOL instead of laughing. Our cafeteria has really smelly food.
LOL.
The pizza is purple and the French fries are slimy.
LOL. LOL.
It was really driving me crazy. So we switched roles, and I came up with the words instead. Rowley started by asking me for the name of a sport, so I said, volleyball. But he told me it's volleyball with a B. So then we got into this huge argument about what letter volleyball starts with. I found a dictionary and handed it to Rowley and told him to look it up himself. But instead of flipping to the letter V, Rowley read every single word in the B section. And when he couldn't find volleyball, he started over from the beginning.
Bacon. Bacteria? Badger?
Rowley accused me of having an outdated dictionary and said that's why volleyball wasn't in it. So then we got into an argument about what year volleyball was invented. By this point, Rowley was really getting on my nerves, and I realized we'd better change gears or we were going to end up in a fight, as usual. I told Rowley maybe we should do something different, and he said he wanted to play hide-and-seek. But the problem with playing hide-and-seek with Rowley is he thinks that when he can't see you, you can't see him. So that makes him really easy to find. I decided we just needed a break from each other. So I came up with an idea. I told Rowley we were going to see who was braver, me, or him, and we stepped out the sliding glass door. Each of us had to walk into the woods and write our name on the tree fort we built last summer, and whoever chickened out was wrong about volleyball and had to call the other guy Sir for the rest of his life. Rowley seemed to think that was a fair deal. I told Rowley I'd go first, and I walked into the woods. But as soon as I knew he couldn't see me, I ran around to the front of my house. There's no way I was going to go into those woods by myself at night. I had written my name on the tree fort when me and Rowley built it over the summer, and that's the reason I came up with the dare. I walked in the front door, made a bowl of ice cream, and relaxed for a while. And I have to say, some time to myself was just what I needed. Once I finished my ice cream, I walked around the side of the house, rubbed some dirt on my face and clothes, then came running out of the woods. I screamed, "There was a big dog or a bear or something back there, but luckily, I outran it." I probably shouldn't have added that last part, because Rowley totally gave up on the dare after that and promptly exclaimed,
"Can we please go inside now, sir?"
Anyway, that break was just what the doctor ordered, and the rest of the night was argument-free, because I think Rowley was appropriately terrified. This morning, my family headed to church, and Rowley came with us. I don't think Rowley's family really goes to church that much, so he's not used to all the rules about what you're supposed to do and when. So I always have to tell him when you need to kneel and stand and all that. Toward the end, we all did the peace be with you part, where you're supposed to shake everyone's hand. I said, "Peace be with you" to Rowley, but he started giggling. I think he must have thought I said, "Peas be with you," like the vegetable. I said, "Peace be with you." He said,
"No, peas be with you."
I don't think Rowley totally understood that you're just supposed to shake hands with people either, because when the woman in the pew behind us said, "Peace be with you," Rowley gave her a big wet kiss on the cheek. After church, we dropped Rowley off at his house, and I was glad he was gone and that I could go back to playing my game. And since he spent the whole ride saying,
"Peace be with you,"
something tells me Mom felt the same way. December. Tuesday. Today I was playing Net Critters in my room and Mom walked in. She watched for a while, then asked what I was doing in the game. I explained that I was watching my Chihuahua watch TV, because if your virtual pet watches at least 2 hours of commercials a day, it makes him happy and you get 20 bonus tokens. Then I asked Mom if she wouldn't mind spotting me $10 because the Net Critters store just started carrying trampoline shoes, and I was pretty sure Gregory's little friend would really like to have them. But I guess I picked the wrong time to ask Mom for a loan, because it seemed like she was in a bad mood. She said I didn't have any appreciation for the value of money, and that if I wanted to pay for my Net Critters habit, it was going to have to come out of my own pocket. I told Mom I didn't have any money of my own, and that's why I kept hitting up her and Dad. But she said there were plenty of things I could do to earn some. She said it's supposed to snow tonight, and I could go out and shovel our neighbor's driveways tomorrow. I really don't feel comfortable knocking on doors and asking our neighbors for money. My school has 3 fundraisers a year, and I have to go from house to house begging people I hardly know to buy something from me. And half the time, I don't even really know what it is I'm selling. I mean, what in the world are hardy geranium bulbs? I wish the school would give us something useful to sell, like candy bars or cookies. The Girl Scouts are lucky, because at least they get to sell stuff people actually want. The way the system works with these fundraisers is that us students do all the work and the school gives us these junky prizes as rewards. One time, I sold $20 worth of gourmet coffee beans, and all I got was a cheap yo-yo that broke before I even got off school property. But Rowley really got stiffed. He sold $150 worth of beans and got a Chinese finger trap as his prize. It actually worked like it was supposed to. But Rowley couldn't get his fingers out, and his mom had to cut it off when he got home. Last year, the school tried something different. They had to sell raffle tickets, and whoever won the raffle would get a spring yard cleanup from the seventh grade class. Mrs. Spangler, who lives down the street from me, won the raffle, and on the first day of spring, the whole seventh grade showed up at her house. But there were only two rakes for all those kids, so most of the class just ended up sitting around with nothing to do. And by the time the spring cleanup was done, Mrs. Spangler's yard was worse off than when it started. The new thing the school is doing is these walkathons. The idea is that we'll walk around the track at school a certain number of times, like 100 or 200 laps, and get our neighbors to sponsor us for each lap we complete. I can understand asking someone to pay for seeds or coffee beans or whatever, but I don't know what kind of person gets pleasure out of having some kid walk around a football field a couple hundred times. The reason the school put on the walkathon in September was so they could pay for a billboard near the town park that said, "Keep the town park clean." I couldn't figure out why the school didn't just skip the walkathon and have the kids clean up the town park instead. But I guess if the seventh grade was involved, they might have completely trashed it. I've done the math, and I've figured out that each grown-up on my street gives me an average of $23 a year for school fundraisers. So I should just invite all the neighbors to my house once a year and tell them to bring me the 23 bucks in cash, because it sure would save everyone a lot of pain and anguish. Wednesday. It snowed last night just like Mom said it would. And while all the other kids in the neighborhood were enjoying their day off from school, I was pounding the pavement looking for work. I thought about whose door I should knock on first, but it wasn't easy. Mrs. DeRocher lives right across the street, but she's a little too affectionate.
How about a hug, Gregory?
And I usually do my best to avoid her. Then there's Mr. Alexander, who moved into the Snellas house. He must not have worn braces as a kid, because his teeth aren't very straight. Unfortunately, the first time Dad met Mr. Alexander was on Halloween. Dad must have thought his teeth weren't real, and he called them hilarious. So I decided to skip Mr. Alexander's house, too. There are people who live on my street that I haven't spoken to in years. When I was about 4, Mom and Dad had a cocktail party for some of the couples in the neighborhood, and I went downstairs during the party to use the bathroom. But I guess back then, I didn't know you were supposed to keep the door locked, so Mr. Harkin walked right in on me, catching me in the act. Oops, sorry about that, buddy. When I was done, I found Mom and told on Mr. Harkin, and I'm sure he felt like a jerk. So I'm not about to knock on the door of some guy I ratted out when I was in preschool and ask him for money either. Today, I realize there's just too much history between me and the people in my neighborhood. So I decided to go one street over to Prentice Lane and start fresh. I walked up to the house on the corner and knocked on the door. But I recognized the lady who answered. She was Mrs. Melcher, one of Grandma's friends from Bingo. I told Mrs. Melcher I was trying to earn a little money shoveling people's driveways and that I'd be happy to do hers for $5. But she told me she never gets visitors and invited me inside to chat. I didn't want to be rude, so the next thing I knew, I was sitting in Mrs. Melcher's living room surrounded by the lawn ornaments she took inside for the winter. I felt a little uncomfortable, but I figured if I was going to ask someone for money, the least I could do was try and be polite. But all I could think about the whole time I sat there was how much money I could have been making if I just knocked on someone else's door instead. I must have been in there for an hour before I was finally able to steer the conversation back to the subject of me shoveling her driveway. But Mrs. Melcher said her son was coming by in his pickup truck any minute, and he plows her driveway for free. So that's an hour of my life I'll never get back. I headed back out onto Prentice Street and started knocking on doors. I guess most people were at work, so it took me a while to find someone who was actually home. I finally got lucky when a guy who looked like he just woke up came to the door. I told him I'd shovel his driveway for $5, and he said it was a deal. I got to work and was making pretty good progress, but it started snowing again while I was shoveling. By the time I finished, it had snowed so much that you could barely tell I did any work. So I rang the doorbell and asked the guy if he wanted me to shovel his driveway again for another $5, but he wouldn't go for it. And to make things worse, the guy said he wasn't going to pay me the first $5 until his driveway was clear like I promised. See, this is why it's a good idea to have a contract before you start working for someone. I got back out there and started shoveling, but so much snow was falling that I was getting nowhere. Then, I had an idea. Grandma's house was only a few streets away, and I remembered that she keeps her lawnmower in the garage, so I walked over to her place and pushed the mower back to the driveway I was working on. I thought the snow mowing idea was genius, and I couldn't believe no one had ever thought of it before. Unfortunately, it didn't go as smoothly as I hoped it would. I thought the snow would shoot out of the side, but the blade cut right through it, and the snow stayed where it was. Eventually, the mower started making funny sounds, and then all of a sudden, it stopped. So I guess those things aren't really built for cold weather. I pushed the mower to Grandma's and put it back in her garage. Hopefully, it will thaw out before the summer rolls around. I still had this guy's driveway to deal with, but now the snow was really coming down, and there was no way I was going to spend the rest of my day working for $5. I needed a quick solution so I could move on. I could see that his garden hose was attached to the house, so I turned it on, put the nozzle to the shower setting, and sprayed down the snow in the driveway. It was great! The water melted the snow on contact, and I was cruising. Then, I saw a sprinkler leaning up against the house. I got an even better idea, and I got that baby going back and forth. Once I was finished, I turned off the sprinkler and knocked on the guy's door. He paid me my $5 when he saw that his driveway was cleared. I was pretty excited about the way things worked out, and I figured if I found some more people with sprinklers, I could have multiple jobs going at once. Unfortunately, I couldn't find anyone else who was home, but my idea probably wouldn't have worked out anyway, because by the time I walked back down Prentice Lane, the driveway I hit with a sprinkler was frozen over. And when Dad got home, we had to go out and buy 5 big bags of rock salt to melt the guy's driveway. So now, instead of having money in my pocket for all my hard work, I'm $20 in the hole. Thursday. Dad wasn't too happy that I turned somebody's driveway into an ice skating rink yesterday, and he said he was disappointed in me for using poor judgment. That's the exact same phrase he used a few weeks ago when I scratched up his car. It all started when I won Student of the Week at school. When you win Student of the Week, they give you a bumper sticker that you can put on your family's car. The bumper sticker is pretty corny, but it was still cool to win it. It read, "My child is the Student of the Week, and I'm mighty proud." I'm not sure why I won, but I think they just give it to everyone eventually. Fregley won Student of the Week this past Friday, and I'm guessing it was for not biting anyone for 5 days straight. Mom wanted to put my sticker on her car, but her bumper is so overcrowded that I knew it would just get lost on there. So I asked Dad if I could put it on his car. Dad recently bought a new car, and I thought my Student of the Week sticker would look really sharp on his bumper. But Dad said he didn't want to junk up his new car. At first, I was disappointed, but I guess I could kind of understand where he was coming from. My family doesn't have anything that's really nice, and when Dad came home from the dealership with a sporty car, I was pretty surprised. Mom wasn't happy that Dad picked out a car without talking it through with her, though. She said the car looked flashy, and that since it only had two doors, it wasn't practical for a family of five. But Dad said it was the car he wanted, and he kept it. After I talked to Dad, I didn't know what to do with my bumper sticker, so I just ended up giving it to Manny and telling him he could put it on his wagon or something. But Manny turned right around and put it smack in the middle of Dad's driver's side door. I freaked out because I knew Dad was going to think I was the one who put it there. I tried to peel it off, but they must use super glue on the backs of those things. So I got some soap and water and tried to scrub it off. But after 20 minutes of scrubbing, I'd barely made a dent. I started looking for different cleaning supplies in the cabinet under the kitchen sink, and I found some steel wool pads that looked like they might do the trick. Those things work pretty good on the pots and pans, so I figured they were worth the try on the car since it was metal too. Sure enough, the steel wool made the bumper sticker come off the car as easy as pie. In fact, it was so easy that I kind of got carried away. I used the steel wool pads to scrape off the bugs and bird poop, too. I figured Dad would be pretty happy I was cleaning his car for free. But when I rinsed the car off with a hose, I got a huge surprise. The steel wool didn't just scrape the bumper sticker and bugs off the car. It scraped the paint off, too. I panicked and started filling in the bare spots with a permanent marker. But the area where the bumper sticker had been was too big, so I wrote a note in Mom's handwriting and taped it over that spot. "Hi, honey. Hope you have a great day. P.S. Why not leave this note on your car so you can read it again tomorrow?" I thought the note might buy me a few days, but Dad uncovered the big area in no time flat. Dad was really mad at me, but Mom came to my defense. She said everyone makes mistakes and that the important thing is that I learn my lesson and move on. I owe Mom for that one. She calmed Dad down and I didn't even get grounded. Dad took the car to the dealer to see how much it would be to get the paint touched up. The dealer told him it was going to cost a lot of money because it was a custom paint job. Mom told Dad this was a sign that it was a mistake to get a fancy car in the first place, and that he should just trade it in for a used minivan instead. So that's what he did. The funny thing is that the minivan already had a Student of the Week sticker on the bumper from the previous owners, but Dad didn't seem to appreciate the humor in that. Sunday. Our family usually goes to church at 9 a.m., but today we went to the folk service at 11. The folk service has a different kind of music than the regular one, and there's a band that plays guitars and stuff like that. Last week, Mom convinced Roderick to join the folk group because she got a flyer saying they were looking for a percussionist. I think Roderick imagined he was going to get to play his drums in church, so he signed up. But it turns out the folk group was looking for someone to play hand percussion instruments, like the tambourine and castanets. Roderick tried his best to look cool up there in the front of the church today, but it's really hard to pull that off when you've got a pair of maracas in your hands. I can totally relate to getting duped into joining something without knowing all the details. Last year, Mom told me I should join the church's pre-teen club, but then I found out they were really lax about who qualified as a pre-teen. I swear there wasn't a kid there older than 8. Every year, our church does this thing called the Giving Tree, where people in need put their requests in envelopes and hang them on the tree. Then a family picks a random envelope, and whatever it says inside is what they're supposed to buy. Stuff like, adult male requests a scarf and a pair of gloves. As far as I know, there aren't any rules about who's allowed to put a request on the Giving Tree, so I decided to try my luck and fill out a form of my own. But something told me Mom and Dad wouldn't approve, so I made sure it couldn't be traced back to me. Juvenile male requests cash, as much as you are willing to donate, please leave the money in an unmarked envelope under the recycling bin behind the church. P.S. Make sure you're not followed. Monday. This year at school, they taped off a bunch of tables in the cafeteria so kids with nut allergies could eat in a separate section. I think it's great the school did that, but it means there's a lot less room for the rest of us to sit. I'm not sure anyone at my school is actually allergic to nuts, though, because for the first 2 months of this year, the tables in the taped-off area were completely empty. But I guess Ricardo Friedman liked the idea of all that elbow room, because today he plopped himself down in the middle of the nut-free zone and ate 2 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches he brought from home. Today we had a general assembly, and everyone was all excited because they told us we were going to get to watch a movie. But it was just one of those educational films about healthy eating. It was called The Nutritionauts versus the Greasy Grimelicks. I know I need to eat healthier, but if you take fast food out of my diet, I'm in big trouble because I'm probably something like 95% chicken nugget. The school has really been cracking down on junk food in the cafeteria. Last week, they replaced the soda machine with a bottled water machine. But if they're going to charge a dollar for a bottle of water, they should probably think of a better place to put it. Not next to the water fountain. Duh. The school also got rid of a bunch of menu items like hot dogs and pizza and replaced them with healthier stuff. They even replaced French fries with a new item called Extreme Sports Sticks. But it took everyone about 5 seconds to figure out that Extreme Sports Sticks are just sliced carrots. I usually bring a bagged lunch to school, but the one thing I would always buy from the cafeteria was a chocolate chip cookie. Last week, though, the chocolate chip cookies were replaced by oatmeal raisin cookies. I still buy them, but I eat around the raisins, which is a lot of work. I can't tell you how many times I've bitten into an oatmeal raisin cookie thinking it was chocolate chip. I have a theory that oatmeal raisin cookies were invented as a practical joke a long time ago, and that they were never actually meant to be eaten. Most of the kids at school aren't too bothered by all the menu changes, but the thing that really set people off was when they took away the energy drinks, like my favorite, Rowdy Riot. The reason the school stopped selling Rowdy Riot was because teachers were complaining that the red dye was making kids hyperactive. And if you walked into my classroom after lunch, you'd see what they were talking about. But when they stopped selling Rowdy Riot, people who were used to drinking 3 or 4 cans a day were totally unprepared to go cold turkey. In fact, some kids ended up having to go down to the nurse's office because they had the shakes from withdrawal. The school wouldn't bring Rowdy Riot back, no matter how much people complained. But the other day, Leon Goodson snuck in a backpack full of Rowdy Riot he'd brought from home and sold cans for $3 a pop. At recess, a few kids who'd bought Rowdy Riot from Leon ducked behind the school and slurped down their drinks where no one could see them. But one of the recess monitors, Mrs. Leahy, got suspicious and went back there to see what was going on. Mrs. Leahy told everyone they had to pour out their drinks immediately or she'd report them to the principal. So they did. But the second she was gone, the kids took off their shoes and sopped up the puddles with their socks. Slurp, slurp. Tuesday. One of the reasons the school has been getting on us about our eating habits is because the presidential fitness test is coming up, where they measure you on all sorts of stuff, like how many sit-ups and chin-ups you can do. Last year, our school was in the bottom 10% in the country, and I guess the school is trying to do anything they can to turn that around. Grown-ups say there's a big problem with kids in our generation being out of shape because they don't exercise enough. But I don't think taking away our playground equipment is really helping matters. In one part of the presidential fitness test, they check to see how many push-ups you can do in a row. The girls in our class did better than the boys, But that's only because the girls get to do an easier kind of push-up. The boys have to keep their whole body straight and go all the way to the floor and then all the way back up again. But the girls get to let their knees touch the ground, so they have a huge advantage. Not all the girls were happy they got to do easier push-ups than the boys, though. In fact, a couple of girls signed a petition saying they demanded to do the same kind of push-ups as the boys. I'm pretty sure I know where they got that idea. In social studies, we're learning about different ways people throughout history have protested to change things they weren't happy about. I think the girls were expecting a big fight out of Mr. Underwood, but he just told them they could do regular push-ups if they felt like it. So now we're all in the same boat. I thought that petition thing was a good idea, though. I figured us boys should be allowed to do the easy push-ups if we want. So I wrote a petition and tried to get signatures. But I got a bad feeling when I saw the group of, shall I say, non-athletes who wanted to sign my petition, and I decided to just drop the whole thing. A couple of weeks ago, we had to do sit-ups during phys ed, but I got cramps and asked Mr. Underwood if I could just do the rest of my sit-ups as homework. He said that was okay, but he wanted proof that I did them. So the next morning, I got some of Mom's mascara and drew a six-pack of abs on my stomach. Then I made sure I had my shirt off when Mr. Underwood walked through the locker room. The next thing I knew, though, I had a bunch of copycats, and the following day, half the guys in my class showed up with their own fake six-packs. And some of those guys were really awful makeup artists. Still, I think we had Mr. Underwood fooled. At least until we got sweaty and the mascara ran. No more six-packs. Wednesday. For the past few days, I've been getting alerts on my NetCritters account. And if I don't get some critters cash soon, I could have a problem on my hands. The mood meter read, Gregory's little friend is feeling agitated. I asked Mom if she could just float me a few bucks so I could get my pet's mood meter back to calm, but she wouldn't budge. Then she said I shouldn't expect her to give me money to buy Christmas presents for the family this year either. She said I'm at the age where I need to be spending my own money so that my gifts mean something. Usually, Mom gives me $20 to spend on presents, and I do all my shopping at the holiday bazaar at school. It's great because I can get all my Christmas shopping done in one shot, and the stuff at the bazaar is dirt cheap. So I always come away with a little money I can spend on myself. I usually spend most of my money at the concession stand. They have the most delicious chicken drumsticks I've ever tasted, but they have a really goofy name, and you feel stupid ordering them. It goes like this. Me. Can I get some of those chicken leg thingies? She. You mean drummies? Me. If that's what you call them. Whatever. I don't know how I'm going to scrape together enough money to buy everyone a present. Basically, there are two times a year when I can count on getting spending money, and that's on my birthday and Christmas. I'm just glad my birthday's a few months away from Christmas, so I get separate gifts for both. I feel bad for people who have their birthday right around the holidays, because it gets lumped together with Christmas, and they end up getting cheated out of a gift. It's not fair, but I guess it's been happening for thousands of years, starting with Jesus. You know he heard, "This gift counts for Christmas and your birthday, Jesus." Gee. Thanks. I realized something today, though. I might not have any cash, but I do have something valuable. My first edition signed copy of the Tower of Druids graphic novel. I got Tower of Druids signed by the author, Kenny Sentazzo, at the comics convention in the city last year. Well, actually, I didn't technically get it signed. Mom did. I waited in line for 2.5 hours, and then I had to take a bathroom break. By the time I got back, Mom had gotten my book signed. I was bummed that I didn't get to meet Kenny Centazzo, but at least I got his autograph. I looked on the computer today and found out that a first edition signed copy of Tower of Druids is worth $40. So that'll cover me for Christmas presents, and I'll have enough left over to get Gregory's little friend that jacuzzi he seems to want. I told Mom about my plan to sell my book, and she didn't like the idea. She said I waited a long time to get that thing signed, and I would really regret selling it. Mom said that when I had kids, they'd be mad I sold it because it'll be worth a lot of money. Well, that settled it for me. I've already decided I'm not having any kids. I want to be a bachelor like my Uncle Charlie, who spends all his money on vacations and heated toilet seats and stuff like that, instead of forking it over to a bunch of ungrateful kids. I can thank my librarian, Mrs. Schneiderman, for getting me into the Tower of Druids series to begin with, because she's the one who started the graphic novel section in our school library. I don't know when they started calling comic books graphic novels, but I'm glad they did. Some of the teachers complained that they don't count as real reading, but the way I see it, if they're in the library, they're fair game for book reports. Unfortunately, when Mrs. Schneiderman put in the graphic novels, she got rid of the easy reader section. I always used the books in the easy reader section to do my reports for social studies, because you could whip through one of them in about 45 seconds. When I was little, I used to want to be an author myself. But whenever I started telling Mom my ideas, she'd say my story was just like some book that was already published. I realized all the good ideas were taken before I was even born. Mom said if I wanted to be an author, I should try coming up with something original. But it was really hard coming up with a fresh idea. So I just took one of my favorite books and more or less copied it word for word with a few small tweaks. When Mom read what I wrote, she was really impressed. And I guess she thought I was some kind of genius or something. But I think Mom got a little carried away. She sent my book to a publisher in New York who told her I'd plagiarized Jeffrey the Gorilla, which was already a best-selling kids' book. Mom was pretty mad at me for passing off the book as my own, but I'm surprised she couldn't figure it out herself from reading it. To confess, I just changed gorilla to dinosaur. Jeffrey the Dinosaur swings from vine to vine. He perches in a tree and eats a banana. Ooh, 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 Jeffrey says as he pounds his chest. Thursday. Well, it turns out my first edition copy of Tower of Druids is totally worthless. I brought it to the comic book shop yesterday afternoon, hoping to cash in, but the guy who works there told me the autograph was a forgery. I told him he didn't know what he was talking about because Mom got my book signed by the actual author. But the comic book guy showed me a catalog with Kenny Centazzo's signature in it, and it looked completely different. I was really confused, but on the walk home, I realized what must have happened. Mom probably got tired of waiting in line at the comics convention and just signed the book herself. In fact, I should have figured that out from the inscription. Readers are winners. Keep reading to make your dreams come true. Your pal, Kenny. It wouldn't be the first time Mom pulled this sort of thing, because she has zero patience for waiting in line. When I was little, I used to like to get my picture taken with the characters at theme parks. But whenever there was more than a 5-minute wait, Mom would just walk to the front of the line and snap a picture of the character and whatever kid was posing with him. That's why our vacation photo albums are full of pictures of random people. When I got home, I went straight to Mom's room with my book, and the look on her face said it all. So now I know why she didn't want me to sell it. I just hope Mom knows that when she doesn't get a present from me on Christmas, she's only got herself to blame. Friday. Even though I was still pretty mad at Mom for forging that signature, she bailed me out today. At school, Rowley was carrying a present, and I asked him what it was for. He said it was his secret holiday buddy gift. I forgot all about the secret holiday buddy thing. Everyone at school is supposed to buy a gift for the person they get assigned and then give it anonymously. The person I was supposed to get a gift for was Dean Della Rosa, who I've known a long time. Back in third grade, I got invited to Dean's birthday party, but Mom got the date wrong, and I showed up at his house a week early. Dean's mom told us the party was the following week, so we went home. But the gift Mom bought for Dean was really cool. A space robot. And I ended up playing with it myself. By the time Dean's actual birthday rolled around, I'd already broken the robot's hand and lost the gun that came with it. So I skipped the party. I've felt guilty about that ever since, and today I didn't want to cheat Dean out of a gift for the second time. So when I got to school, I asked the secretary in the front office to call Mom and see if she could pick something up for me. And she came through just in time. The teacher started handing out the secret holiday buddy gifts, and I got a jar of gummy bears. Finally, there was only one present under the tree, and it was the one for Dean. Unfortunately, Mom didn't understand that the gift was supposed to be anonymous, so it was totally embarrassing when the teacher read the card on Dean's present out loud. This one says, "To Dean Della Rosa, from your secret holiday buddy, Greg Heffley." Dean looked like he wanted to crawl under his desk and hide, and I felt the same exact way. Saturday. I always thought the only place in the world where you could get drummies was at the holiday bazaar. But today, me and Mom were at the grocery store, and you'll never believe what I found in the frozen food aisle. A 20-count box of drummies. Now I know that I can have drummies whenever I want, and that they're totally ripping us off at the holiday bazaar. You can buy a whole box at the store for what they charge for 3 or 4 individual drummies at school. In fact, now that I could get my own drummies, I realized I could run my own holiday bazaar. But first, I had to buy up the grocery store supply before the school beat me to it. Other kids in my neighborhood have done this sort of thing before. Last summer, Bryce Anderson and a bunch of his cronies set up a restaurant for all the neighborhood parents. I heard they pulled in almost $300, and I know for a fact that one of Bryce's goons bought a brand new BB gun with his share, because he shot me in the butt with it. I knew I couldn't run a holiday bazaar all by myself, so I called Rowley and asked him to help out. We found some Christmas ornaments and some other stuff in my basement we could sell, but I figured if we were going to compete with the school's holiday bazaar, we'd have to come up with better games than the beanbag toss and the ping pong ball bounce. Rowley suggested a dunk tank, but I told him I didn't think Mom would allow that in the house. Plus, we had a dunk tank when we ran a fun fair in Rowley's yard over the summer, and it was a disaster. We didn't know you were supposed to protect the guy in the dunk tank by putting him in a cage, so instead of aiming at the trigger, everyone aimed at the guy. Ouch. Me and Rowley decided it would be really cool if our holiday bazaar had a video game arcade. We didn't have the money to buy real arcade machines, so we got a bunch of cardboard boxes out of the basement to make homemade versions. We started off with Pac-Man, because we thought it would be pretty easy to make. In Pac-Man, you've got a little character who goes around eating pellets while getting chased by ghosts. In our version, we were going to have Rowley on the inside of the box, operating ghosts glued to pencils, while the person who was playing the game maneuvered Pac-Man from the outside with a popsicle stick. We spent the next 2 hours making the box look just like the real thing. But while we were working, Rowley started asking questions about how long he was going to be in the box and what would happen if he needed a bathroom break. I gave him an empty 2-liter soda bottle to keep in the box for when he had to go number one. Rowley asked what he would do if he needed to go number two, but I told him we'd cross that bridge when we came to it. Once we were done coloring in our machine, we started cutting out the groove where the popsicle sticks were supposed to go. But I guess we weren't really thinking ahead, because as soon as we cut the outer border, the whole maze fell inside the machine. So I guess we're not going to make a lot of money on Pac-Man unless people are willing to pay 25 cents to see Rowley sitting in a box.